was a guy who owned a fishing resort when I was a little bit. When I was like 4 or 5 years old, he had a fishing resort actually down on Lake Norfolk. We actually drive by it on the way to go fishing on our trout fishing trip in the winter. And when I was a little guy, my dad and mom would take me down there, and I just loved to go out on the dock with him. He'd take me out in his little boat with the, you know, one of these motors that you, like a little 10-horse motor, and he'd just tool around the lake, we'd fish. And my first 5 minutes of fame, my first time I was in a newspaper, I was about 5 years old, and caught a 9-pound channel catfish. Now, I'm going to be real honest with you and tell you, I don't know if I caught it or my grandpa caught it. And my guess is, when I was seven, I thought I caught it. But now that I'm a dad and realize what this is like, I'm coming more and more to believe that probably not. It may be at best, he let me hold the rod for a second. But he gave me all the credit and took a picture and sent it into the local West Plains newspaper, and I had a picture of myself with this fish. But the funny thing was, at that age, 9-pound catfish, I couldn't hold it up. My grandpa actually yelled at me. It's the only time I remember my grandpa yelling at me, thinking, come on, you ought to be stronger than this. You're a Hubbard kid. Pick that thing up. And I couldn't lift thing up, so he had to tie it onto a bamboo pole and take the bamboo pole and hang it over on the walkway of the boat dock that was part of his fishing resort. And I just held onto the bamboo pole as it was supported by the dock, took a picture, I ended up in the newspaper. Fishing's fun. And the great thing about fishing is that it doesn't matter who you are. You do not have to be an expert. I mean, there's guys like Bill Dance and Hank Parker, and man, they know how to go out and catch fish. But the truth of the matter is, anybody with a line and a pole and a lure can go out and throw the line in the water and catch a fish. And there is something about the thrill of that moment when all of a sudden you feel see the bobber going down, or you feel the tug on the line, and you start feeling that jerking, and all of a sudden you're reeling it in, and you feel that fish swimming, and you just keep pulling and pulling and pulling, and eventually comes in, and you pick the fish up, and you're just like, oh, this was so much fun, and you'll be hooked for life. There's just something about that experience that whether you're 5 or 50, whether you have been fishing all your life, or like Mike, or it's your first time out, and you're out and you catch a fish, there's something about that moment when you catch a fish and you go fishing that is thrilling and is challenging and is a lot of fun. And Jesus used the analogy of fishing to be kind of a metaphor or a picture of something much greater for those who have found Jesus, have figured out that he is beautiful and wonderful in their lives. The first time he was talking to his disciples, as he was calling his disciples to follow him, the language he used was, he said, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Now, the interesting thing is that, first of all, he was talking to fishermen, so they got the analogy right off. But the other thing about this is he didn't say, follow me and then try really hard to be a fisher of men. He said, follow me. As you follow me, the outcome is that I'm going to make you into something. Now, you would have thought, here's Jesus, the like most holy person ever, the Son of God, God in the flesh comes. You would think he would say, follow me and I will make you really holy. Follow me and I will make you perfect. Follow me and I will make you pure. But he looks at these fishermen and he says, follow me and I will make you a fisher of men. I will use the personality of the person that you are, but instead of catching fish, you are going to catch people for a greater cause. You're going to draw them in for a greater purpose. I will use you to be a fisher of men. And we're starting a series here at Genesis that just talks about what it looks like to be people who are fishing, to be people who figure out what it looks like as followers of Jesus, to have our line in the water, to be intentionally relational, to be reaching out and connecting with people, and to be loving people, and then to be literally fishing, to be following Jesus in such a way that we are fishing for people, that we are calling them out and loving them in a way that's showing them the gospel. Now, the big word that is used to talk about is the word evangelism. And it's almost like scary. I come out here and use the word evangelism, and some of you are like, oh no, not evangelism, not 4 weeks on that. Oh my gosh, this is terrifying. This is freaking me out because that word scares me. And it's kind of a scary word in our society, but the big idea here, evangelism is not, you know, a system. We're not like, some of you are already thinking, okay, in 2 weeks, he's going to have us going door to door. I'm going to have to knock on somebody's door with this little brochure and look somebody in the eye, and they're going to look at me and go, are you a Mormon? I'm like, no, no tie, no bicycle. I'm not, but I do have something like that for you. And you're freaked out by this already, okay? But evangelism just simply is sharing the gospel and the power of the Holy Spirit and leaving the results to God. It's just the idea that somehow out of my life, out of the flow of my life, out of the way I talk, the way I live, that there's something different about me, that I have a different message, and that comes up in conversation. And then I don't try to bully anybody. I don't try to push somebody. I don't try to convince them of something that they don't believe. I just leave the result to God. Evangelism is not necessarily trying to convince people, to be honest with you. We'll talk a little bit about that more in a few minutes. It's not trying to be the one who's always trying to win an argument. Ultimately, evangelism is just sharing your story, sharing fish stories, talking about Jesus, and then letting the results of what happens in your life, leaving the results to God. He will work it out. But part of evangelism is that we know people, that we're praying for people, that we're intentionally relational with people. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have a series that looks at this idea of what it means to be a fisher of men. A person, as I follow Jesus, I'm a fisher of men. Now, the interesting thing is that recently Lifeway Research did a survey, and they surveyed about over 2,000 people who are sitting in churches like ours, who go to church every Sunday morning, who are part of a church and may go to a Sunday school class or a community group, but they are involved in the life of the church. And they want to find out what's really going on with people and the way they see this idea of being a fisher of men. What does it look like to be somebody who is actively involved in reaching out, of loving Jesus, and that just being contagious? And we have a visual, I think, for you up here. Hopefully you can see it. If you're not, I can kind of show it. It says, just sharing Christ, survey of over 2,000 people. Here's the first thing. 80% people agree, I have a personal responsibility to share my religious beliefs about Jesus Christ with non-Christians. So 8 out of 10 people sitting in churches like this who say, I'm a follower of Jesus, I've trusted him with my life, I love Jesus deeply. 8 out of 10 of you say, yes, it's important. I do need to share my faith with other people. I do need to be involved in making a difference. But with that, 61% have not shared with anyone and shared Christ on any level with anyone in the last 6 months. 48% have not invited anyone to church in the past 6 months. 20% rarely or never pray for people. 8% are not, I can't read that. They're not hesitant in their, to what others, I can't read it. Getting old. Are hesitant to let others know that they are Christians. So 8%, almost 1 out of 10 are like, I just don't want anybody to know. I don't even want anybody to know that I'm a Christian. But 75% say they feel comfortable talking about it. Now, 8 out of 10 say, man, we should be doing it. Almost 8 out of 10 say, oh, I'm comfortable doing it, but 6 out of 10 never do. And here's the deal. In our experience here, I think probably those statistics would bear true here as well. And when we talk about what it looks like to be evangelistic, to share the gospel, to be doing this, there are two parts of what it means to be a person or a church that is investing in the lives of others for the purpose of the kingdom of God, okay? The first thing is the first aspect of sharing our faith is demonstration, or the hands. It's what we do. It's serving. It's loving. It's caring. The second part of sharing the gospel is proclamation, or what we say with our mouths, the tongue. So there's demonstration and proclamation. And the idea here is that with demonstration, proclamation, that both of these ought to be part of who we are as a church, and both of these ought to be part of who I am as an individual. But this is what I think is going on here at Genesis, and this is why we're doing this series. We were talking about this with the elders. We talked about this at the elders' retreat. We actually started having conversations about this back last spring, and this is what we believe. And you just kind of go with me and see if you agree. As a church, the demonstration portion of the gospel, of living out the gospel, the part of serving, doing, being involved in this, in our community for the good of the kingdom of God, of living our faith out in our neighborhoods through our community groups, that portion of it, we're actually doing okay. I mean, yesterday, great example, man, great crowd from Genesis. Whole bunch of you showed up, and we walked through the city following the parade, just talking to people as we were collecting their trash and cleaning up the parade route. And every time we get done, the people of the city, I mean, the people who work for the city of Eureka, are just like, you cannot believe how helpful this is. You cannot believe what this means to us. We are so thankful for Genesis Church for serving us in this way. And I have a lot of joy, not because I'm going, hey, we had the best float in the parade. Look at us. We're the cool ones who serve. I have this joy because I think we are demonstrating that Christ has changed our lives by the fact that we are willing to serve the city and the fact that our existence in the city should make the city a better place because we are people who have the true King. Okay? Now, I look at my own life, same thing. I will mow a neighbor's lawn. I will serve a person up the street. I will help with stuff in the city. I will be involved in all kinds of things because I want my faith to show. But the second aspect of it, the proclamation, the actual sharing of the gospel, the actual speaking into people's lives and telling them why and who and how and about the gospel. First of all, I think as a church, we probably aren't as strong there. And the reason I would say that, there's some of you that probably are pretty good, but the reason I would say that is the most important form of communication about who Jesus is and about Genesis is not us buying an ad in the newspaper. In fact, we used to invest a lot of money in marketing. You know how many people showed up because of the money we invested in marketing? None. We quit spending money on putting stuff in the newspaper, buying, you know, ads and, you know, just stuff where people would see our name out there because in terms of what that was accomplishing, it wasn't helping out a whole lot. The flip side of that is most people showed up at Genesis because somebody said, hey, I'm going to this church. It's helping me grow my faith. Kind of Mike Burley story. And I'd like you to come to church with me on Sunday morning. And so if that was really going on, we would see a lot more of you investing in people's lives and people showing up at church. Now, you need to hear me. I use that as an illustration, not to say, and the goal here is that we will have a lot more people next Sunday. That's not the goal. The goal is literally for us to be a people who are following Jesus, and it shows up because we're fishing. That's the goal. And so we want to spend a few weeks just first of all, challenging you to consider, hey, if I'm following Jesus, what does this look like in our life? And then what we want to do is we want to fill your tackle box. Most of this is going to be crazy practical. This morning is going to be more why. After this morning, the whole series is how. Well, what do I need to fill my tackle box with? And we're not going to make you memorize anything. We're not going to make it super difficult so that you have to have like a PhD in apologetics. And we are not going to ask you to go knock on anybody's door. I promise you, we're not going to ask you to go up to somebody, knock on their door that you don't know and go, hi, I'm from Genesis Church and I'm just here to talk to you. We're not going to ask you to do anything like that. What we are going to encourage you to do is to start considering the relationships you have in the world around you and to say, maybe God put me in these relationships for a greater purpose than just to be friends, to be family, to be a worker. And then figure out what it looks like to be a person who has the pole in their hand and be casting into the lives of people to leverage your relationships for the purpose of the kingdom, for the glory of God. Now, if you're here this morning, you're like, okay, listen, I just started going to church. I'm not really sure I'm into this Jesus thing. I'm not really sure that I get this yet. And this is the one thing that totally freaks me out about Christians, that all you want to do is you want to try to convince everybody that they're wrong and you're right. And here you are trying to tell me that that's what I'm supposed to do. The first thing I would tell you is hang with us. Just see it through, because I hope that's not what this comes across as. We don't want people going and getting in arguments. We don't want people to try to push anybody. We don't want to try to make it where we're antagonistic, us against the world. Actually, what we hope to see is that fishing people are us for the world and us for the city of Eureka and us for the neighbors that live around me, but that God has something beautiful in their lives and I might be the person who has the opportunity to have that conversation. Some of you are like, listen, I don't know enough about Jesus and the gospel. I could not win an apologetics argument. And some of you are like, I don't even know what that word means, apologetics. That's a big word that means defending the faith. And you're like, if I got an argument with somebody about why is Jesus true, I would lose because I don't know enough. Don't freak out. God wants to use you as you are. And this is not about you having all this knowledge and having to memorize a whole bunch of stuff so that you can win an argument. Some of you, your questions are, as you listen to this, you're like, listen, I don't have that personality. I mean, you're asking me to change my God-given personality, and it totally freaks me out to talk to people I don't know. That's one of the things that I struggle with. Like, if you know me, I'm pretty talkative. And I'm, thank you. Hey. And I'm fairly outgoing with people that I know. But to be honest with you, when I'm hanging out with people that I don't know, I really don't like to engage conversation with people that I don't have a relationship with. I'm not the person who gets on an airplane, and by the time I'm getting off the plane, I know everybody that are in the row behind me, row in front of me, the person next to me. And I got a story later in the series to tell you about that one, because I do everything when I get on a airplane to sit by myself. And I want to read, and I don't want to talk to people I don't know. And like, if you're like, you're asking me to change my personality, you're going to make me talk to people I don't know. No, we're not. We're going to ask you to consider that God has wired you the way you are to be a certain type of fisher person and to use who you are for the glory of God and to figure that out. If you're like, listen, I'm not even a Christian yet, here's the deal. I want to encourage you that end this series, just listen to the message of Jesus calling these men to be fishermen. And figure out if that message is for you, because maybe it is that God has something beautiful for you in this series that will end up being like Mike's story. That's why hopefully every week we're going to have a fishing story. Somebody telling you, listen, I was once far from God, but something happened in my life, and it happened because somebody invested in me. And now I'm here today because Jesus makes all the difference in the world. We want you to hear those fishing stories to hear the truth of how God uses people who are fishing. And so if you're here and you're just one of the things that I struggle with is I can't have like the rejection thing. You're like, all right, if I bring it up, my friends are going to think I got like green eyes and horns and I'm just weird and they're going to reject me and it's going to feel very awkward from then on the rest of my life. Just start praying and asking God to figure out what that looks like in your life and help you with that. But I think God even has in those situations ways that you could be the type of person who's fishing. And so if you're here, you're like, I have objections. I'm not real crazy about the fact that we're doing this kind of series. My challenge to you is just hear the words of Jesus and consider the possibility that to follow Jesus means to figure out what it means to let him make me a fisher of men. And every person in here, no matter who you are in your life, it's going to look different from me and the person next to you. But you need to hear what Jesus is saying and what I'm saying. We're going to look at the story in just a second about this. I think one of the things that Jesus is trying to make clear to his disciples is if you aren't fishing, you aren't following. Jesus said, follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. There is a cause and effect relationship. If you are not fishing, there's probably something wrong with what it means, what you think it means to be a follower of Jesus. And so we want to challenge you and encourage you and give you all these tools to say, what might this look like in my life and all that kind of stuff. And that's why we're doing this series, Go Fish. And that's why we're going to talk about for 4 weeks just what it looks like. This is kind of a whole church campaign. So if you're in a community group, you're going to be doing this in community. You're going to kind of be taking what we talk about here on Sunday and processing it and then coming up with a whole bunch of other ideas and sharing personal stories and all that kind of stuff. And this is kind of where we're going for the next 4 weeks. So be here on Sunday. Be part of a community group so you can flesh this out. We don't want this to be just a big, giant information download. We really want it to be a time where you are challenged and that it becomes practical and this works out in your life and that we as a church go from being strong in demonstration but kind of weak in proclamation to being balanced in our evangelism so that we are still demonstrating the gospel, but we are also now proclaiming the gospel, speaking it. And we're doing that. So what I want to do this morning is I want to show you the story out of the book of Luke where Jesus does this with, and it's a crazy, amazing story where Jesus does this first call, where he looks at these four dudes who are fishermen and says, all right, follow me, and I'm going to make you fishers of men. Because it doesn't just happen. Something happens right before that that totally gets their attention and shows them the beauty of who Jesus is and why it's going to be worth it to follow him. So if you have a Bible, turn to Luke chapter 5. Verse 111, if you don't have a Bible in your rows, we have Bibles for you. We would love for you to take one of those Bibles and read along with us and just kind of follow with us in that Bible. Luke chapter 5, verses 1 to 11. And so what I want to do here just for the next few minutes is I want to talk through the story. I want to tell the story to you, maybe put a little flesh and bones on it. And then as I talk through the story to you, I want to give you some reasons. Why should we fish? Why should we listen to this message? Why should we be involved in this? Why should I even consider talking to another person about my faith in Jesus? And I'm going to give you some reasons for that that kind of flow from the text, but are just general to all of us, a challenge, okay? Luke chapter 5, verses 1 to 11. This is a story about Jesus. This is a story about a man who became God and lived his life as a human being on this earth, He lived this perfect life that I should have lived, and he died the death I should have died. But during his ministry, he hung out with a bunch of people. He did a lot of teaching. He did a lot of miracles that demonstrated who he was, that he was really from God, that he really was sent by God to fulfill the purpose of God on this earth. And as Jesus is hanging out and teaching, something amazing happens that turns in this really cool story. So chapter 5, he says, on one occasion while the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. In other words, that's also called the Sea of Galilee. Okay, same lake, two different names from two different regions. Kind of, people had different nicknames for it. And so all of a sudden, Jesus is teaching. There's this huge crowd. We found out in other places this crowd may have been as many as 15,000 to 20,000 people. Okay, and they are talking to him. They are pressing in on him. Jesus is teaching. And so he said he saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. So Jesus turns and sees a boat, and the fishermen aren't there. They're over on the side. So here's this picture. Paint the picture. Here's this huge crowd. Here's Jesus like being pressed, and he's almost being pushed where he's almost in the water. Meanwhile, the fishermen are over there, and they stink. They're smelly. They've been fishing all night. We'll find out in the story. And oh, by the way, they didn't catch nothing. But they're cleaning their nets. Now, I don't know about you, if you've ever been on a good fishing trip, but I like the fishing part. I don't like the cleanup part. And especially if I was a fisherman back then, and instead of using rods and reels, we're using nets. Because what happens is you're casting the nets, you're throwing it. If you catch fish, you have all kinds of stuff from fish, but you also have all kinds of other junk that just filled the net. They have to meticulously go through and clean out the nets. And they don't have this really cool power washer thing, just and spray it all out. This is a tedious, nasty, horrible job. It's a pain in the rumpus, okay? Nobody wants to do it, but if you're fishermen, it's part of the gig. And so now they are cleaning the nets. They're over here just picking their nets, cleaning it. And Jesus is standing next to the shore. He notices their boat, and he turns and he looks at them, and he says, verse 3, getting into one of the boats, clean your nets after you had a really good catch and you feel good about the night. It's another thing to work all night and to fish all night and have nothing to show for it, and you still got to do the work. And now Jesus looks at Peter and says, hey, man, will you come help me? Will you push your boat out? Will you just kind of be my boat captain for a few minutes while I get to talk to these people? And I imagine Peter looked at him and was like, really? But he comes and he gets in a boat and he pushes out, and Jesus sits down in the boat and begins to teach. Now, in that day, we have it backwards, okay? In that day, if you were in the crowd, you stood and the teacher sat. Now, the teacher stands, y'all sit. You probably like that option better. But the official teaching position of a rabbi at the time of Jesus, an official teacher, you didn't stand and teach, you sat and taught. And so Jesus now is taking the position of an official teacher. He sits in the boat and he begins to teach. Verse 4, and he says, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. Annoying thing number 2. Now, it's one thing to say, hey, man, could you push the boat off? Give me a few minutes to talk. But now, the carpenter. Jesus was a carpenter. He was not a fisherman. The carpenter turns to the fisherman and says, hey, man, will you push out a little farther? Get out there. There's that deep hole out there. And will you cast your nets? And now you got to see Peter going, dude, seriously. Now, we don't have this in the text, but I think I can tell you what he was thinking. Number 1, dude, you're a carpenter, not a fisherman. Number 2, you don't even know how to fish, bro. Because everybody knows that when you cast a net, if you're going to fish in the morning, you fish near the shore. Because in the morning, fish are going to come in to feed near the shore. We're going to cast our net near the shore. You might catch fish out in the deep at night, if you want to go out to the deep. That's the only time to cast your nets in the deep, because sometimes at night they will go to deeper, clearer water. But during the morning, you fish during the shore. But by the way, Jesus, I don't know where they are, man. We fished all night. There are no fish. They are not here. They've gone to the other side of the lake. I mean, seriously, carpenter, fisherman. We caught nothing. You think you're going to be able to tell me today, just carpenter boy, you think you'd be able to tell me just to push off, drop my net, and it's going to happen? I mean, Jesus asked them to do something that, first of all, isn't the right way to fish. It's not the way you fish. And these guys are just worn out. They don't want to fish anymore. But Peter's response is very interesting. He says, and Simon answered, Master, we toiled all night, and we took nothing. You hear that? All right, man, we fished all night, but if it's going to make you happy, I will cast the net. But at your words, I will let down the nets. And when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish. Now, this is what happened. They're out in the deep, wrong time to fish, wrong way to fish, shouldn't be fishing that way, and they're tired. He drops his net, and every fish in the area went, ooh, look, net, Disney World, let's have fun. And all of a sudden, every fish that wasn't there just a few hours before now swims up and goes, this is going to be a cool thing. They swim into the net, and Peter, who is alone in the boat, you can't get one of these nets in by yourself. Peter, who is alone in the boat with the carpenter, now has so many fish in his net, he is about to lose grip, and it's full of fish, just chock full of fish, and he's starting to freak out. Look at what he says. He says, and when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. The nets are tearing. These nets that are really expensive, really important, they are tearing. And they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. So now that they are coming, and they jump in the other boat, they push it off, they come out, they're trying to help Peter and Jesus pull these fish in. And they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. That is a good fishing trip. I mean, if you got so many fish that the boat's going down, you might want to stop, come in, and just clean, because you're done. You can't go anymore. Both the boats began to sink. And when Simon Peter saw it, now, you expect Peter to go, oh my gosh, Jesus, you're like Bill Dance. Teach me how to fish. Oh my gosh, Jesus, that's amazing. Can you teach me what you did? Can you show me? It's not how Peter responds, and how he responds is very important, because look at what he does. He says, verse 8, but when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees saying, depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord. Now, here's the deal. This is actually connected to the whole Bible. All throughout the Old Testament, the story before Jesus shows up, there are a bunch of things that are called theophanies. It's a big word to say God shows up in physical form and people meet God face to face. And every time in the Bible, God shows up in physical form and meets somebody face to face, their response is to fall on their face before God, to realize that they are sinful people and are not on any level deserving of being in the presence of the one who they are with. And to cry out their sinfulness, because they know if they get in that moment what they deserve, there is no hope. And Peter realizes this carpenter from Galilee is the next theophany. He is face to face with the God who created the fish who just swam into his nets. He's the creator of the wood that made the boats, and he's his creator. And he comes to this realization. He falls in his face, and he goes, man, get away from me, because if you stay in this boat, I have no hope. Your holiness, your passion, you will consume me, because I am a sinful, broken person. And what happens is that when he does this, Jesus is beautiful. For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so also were James and John, the son of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. These four men all were just at awe. They didn't know what to do. It was a moment of craziness in their mind. And Jesus said, Simon, do not be afraid. Fear not. Don't be afraid. I didn't do this so I could whack you here. I didn't do this to show off. I did this because I want you to see something. He says, Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men. And this is where in every other story that Luke just changes the language. In every other story, he says this, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. And they respond. Look at how they respond. And when they had brought their boats to the land, they left everything and followed Jesus. In this story, what happens with Peter, Andrew, James, John, two sets of brothers, they are in fishing business together. Their dad, it's the Zebedee, James and John's dad owned the fishing business. It's the Zebedee and Sons Fishing. They leave it all. They leave the nets, they leave the boats, they leave everything, and they follow Jesus. Why? Because they saw in this story something that was amazing. They found in Jesus the person who would make all their other realities make sense. They found in Jesus the one who could fill the emptiness and the brokenness and who could forgive the sinfulness. They found in Jesus their only hope, and they gave up everything and followed. And the storyline is that for 3 years, they followed Jesus. They hang out with him on earth. They watch him teach. They watch him do miracles. They watch him do all these crazy things. And then on the night where he's about to die, Jesus tells them, you're all going to abandon me. They all, and Peter's the first one, goes, no, I won't. I will fight with you to the death. But when Jesus is having his trial, Peter runs from Jesus. And once again, his sinfulness is on display. But Jesus, once again, after he dies on the cross, he rises again and pulls Peter back to himself, forgives him, and now Peter becomes this person and who has trusted Jesus, who has experienced forgiveness. And what happens 50 days later, this man who Jesus said, follow me and I will make you a fisher of men, 50 days after Jesus dies on the cross, Peter stands up in the middle of the city, Acts chapter 2, and he starts throwing a line. He starts throwing a line, and he starts preaching the gospel. He starts preaching the gospel. And on the day he was fishing with Jesus, there were so many fish that the fish filled the boat. On the first day, he grabs a line and starts fishing. 3,000 people say, I need Jesus as my king. I need Peter, what do we have to do to be saved? And this simple, uneducated, ordinary fisherman changes the world. Why? Because he started casting a line. He followed Jesus. He realized Jesus was worth it. He started casting a line. Why should we fish? Why should we do a series like this? Why should we encourage you? Listen, talk to people, leverage your relationships, have proclamation. Why should we do this? I just want to share with you 5 reasons why we should be people who are telling our faith. Yes, we should be showing it. We should be serving in our community. We should be making a difference in our community groups by serving neighborhoods. We should go to Haiti. We should help the poor. We should go to Ecuador and make a difference. But why should we fish in our personal lives as a church? Why should this be part of who we are? I want to give you 5 reasons real quick why we should be a church, an individual. Or I'm sorry, 4 reasons why we should be fishing. Did I say 5? That's 4. I was never good at math. To be honest with you, if Jesus said, follow me and I will make you a math teacher, it would have taken a real miracle. I guess in this, it's a real miracle too. So there you go. Follow me. 4 reasons why fish. First of all, we know a great God. We know a great God. We have in the story of the Bible, this beautiful story of a God who is on mission, a God who saves, a God who rescues. The crazy thing is in our culture, only 1.5 to 4% of people claim to be atheists. Most people in our culture believe in God. 19% of people, if you take this 1.5 and add to it, it makes up 19. Under 20% of people are skeptics. So 1 out of 5 people you run into are either, I don't believe in God, or I'm really skeptical. You're going to have to prove it to me. I'm not really sure what all this means. 8 out of 10 people in our culture say they know God, they believe in God, they have some kind of idea of God, they've come to the conclusion that there is a God, and so they have some kind of framework which they say there is a God. But the problem is that the concept of God in our culture, and really every culture, is that instead of knowing the one true God, knowing the God who is revealed in Jesus, we come up with, we make our own designer gods. In other words, most people in our culture believe in God, but instead of looking to God and figuring out who he is, they have made God in their own image. They've come up with a God that fits their lifestyle, their ideals, who they think God is. And I hear people all the time who they will say something like this. Well, my God isn't like this. My God isn't a judge. My God isn't, doesn't have this idea. And all they're saying is, listen, I do believe in God, but it's my designer God. I want God to be the type of person, the type of God that I want. And so I've made God into my image and I want a God who is all about me. And the crazy thing about the idea of designer gods is at the end of the day, they may make you feel better. They will not solve your deepest problems. Those gods will not work. Eventually, those gods will fail you. They may make you feel warm and fuzzy inside, and they may give you all kinds of things that you can put on a bumper sticker or on a coffee mug and put in your, you know, in your cupboard and have all kinds of cute slogans. But at the end of the day, there is only one true God. There's only one God who really saves. There's only one God who really redeems. There's only one God who really transforms. And that God is revealed in the scriptures. And that God is true. And that God is real. And that God came. Jesus came and said, I am here to show you what God is like. And when we are in a world where there are people who say, listen, I believe in God, but he's like this. The truth of the matter is that the Bible and the scriptures and Jesus himself are calling and saying, listen, the problem is not that people don't believe in God. The problem is that they don't believe in me, the real God. They have replaced me with a designer God. And the problem is that people don't really know God. And our deepest issue is that we need a God that we can know, that God has revealed himself. And so it is going to be a people who understand there is a great God, and we're not making up designer gods, that we've met the true God, and that God is really making a difference in our lives, and that we are people who truly have tasted deeply, and we see that Jesus is who he claimed to be. But see, this is, I'm presenting it to you. I even feel myself. I'm building an argument. But that's not the issue. The issue is that it's about people who have met that God and have tasted his grace deeply. Psalm 34:8, the psalmist says this, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. How blessed is the person who takes refuge in him. And part of the reason maybe we don't fish is because we are people who aren't really tasting deeply. Because if we are tasting deeply from the well that is Christ, it will come out. And as we realize God is a great God, not because I can rationalize him, not because I can read a whole bunch of books and win all kinds of arguments, but God has done something beautiful and deep and meaningful in my life. I have experienced his grace. I have experienced his forgiveness. I have experienced his goodness. I have seen his blessing. I am a blessed person because I've found my refuge in Christ. And now the taste of Jesus is so beautiful. It just becomes something that's really real. And we become people who, the true God, the only one who truly satisfies, the only one who truly blesses, is doing that in our lives. And as he's doing that in our lives, we've tasted and we've seen. Krispy Kreme donuts is a dangerous place for me. They've got that light. What's the light say? Hot donuts now. I keep praying, God, I know what heaven will be. Will be better than my wildest, my imaginations. But please, Jesus, can you make Krispy Kreme donuts not fattening there? And the promise is there will be something better. That's a joke, okay? But bottom line is, there's something about that. Now, those of you who've never been to Krispy Kreme donuts, that hot donuts now light means nothing to you. It's just a light. You're like donuts. I can get donut schnooks. Those of you who have been to Krispy Kreme, especially, see, they get you. You walk in, and before they ask you your order, the first thing the person behind the counter at Krispy Kreme does is they take one of the donuts that's just come down this ginormous conveyor belt, and you are watching as this beautiful dough is made into the shape of a donut, and then it falls underneath the waterfall of sugar. And then it drops and it moves. I mean, it's gone through the oil, through the waterfall of sugar, and now it's on this conveyor belt. And they take this little stick, and the thing's just oozing and dripping, and it's hot. And they take a stick, they pick it up, they put it in a wrapper, and they hand it to you. Because they know that if you have tasted that hot Krispy Kreme donut, you are not just eating one. You're going to take it home to your whole family. You want everybody to know a Krispy Kreme donut. And then you get home and you taste them. They're so delicious and wonderful, but they're not hot anymore. So you try to put it in a microwave, and that actually works, but not like that. And so someday, eventually, you're like, we are going to Krispy Kreme donut. We're going to eat them right there, the whole family. Yes, their coffee's terrible, but the donut is worth it. And when you've been to a Krispy Kreme donut place, that hot donuts now thing, it draws you. You feel the pull. And if you're with somebody who looks at you and goes, hot donuts now, it's just a donut. You look at them like they're nuts. And you're like, oh my gosh, I've got to pull off the road here. You've got to try this. Because you know if you walk them into Krispy Kreme donuts, you will ruin their life and they will not be shaped like me. But it's worth it. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. We have a great God. And if we're tasting him deeply, it's like the hot donuts now thing. We know what that light means. We feel the glory of who he is. We are awed at the wonder of Jesus. We are awed not just at the story that's in the Old Testament and the story that's in the New Testament, which is the basis of what we're doing, but we know that that story has changed me and I've tasted and I have a great God. And if we're not sharing, it's maybe because we are not tasting. We have a great God. But not only do we have a great God, he is a great God who has a great story. And that story begins with creation, that God created everything, and that God is perfect in his moral attributes, and he is glorious in who he is, and he created us in his image. But that story is brought kind of to its climax, and as he stepped into our story, Jesus came, and he lived among us. He was a real dude with real skin and real issues and real struggles, but as he lived his life on this earth, Jesus, the story of Jesus was all about God putting on flesh and dwelling among us. And he died the death I should have died. He rose again 3 days later, defeating death, hell, and the grave. But that's not the end of the story. That's the climax. The beauty of the story is that the story goes on. And on the day of Pentecost, I referenced it. Peter preaches, 3,000 people give their lives to Jesus. And the story continues. And what happened? If you're here today and you are a follower of Jesus, you have come to a point where you look to Jesus and went, yes, I get it. Hot donuts now. I am tasting that the Lord is good. I am giving myself to Jesus. I am trusting you with my life because if I trust me with my life, I will really mess it up. So I trust you with my life. At some point in time, that happened because somebody said to you, you know what? Jesus is worth it. Somebody showed you the hot donuts now. Like somebody said, listen, if you would just place your faith in Jesus and you were skeptical and you went, I don't know. I don't think that can do it. Well, I'm religious. I have my own way. You had all kinds of objections, but eventually something went off on the inside of you and somebody, whether it was a friend or whether it was a preacher, maybe it was here on a Sunday morning at Genesis, somebody talked about Jesus and something really crazy happened. The voice of the person who was talking to you became the voice of Jesus in your ears. And you heard the master call you. And just like the master called the fisherman, he called you. And you know that even though it was somebody else talking, it was his voice that was coming through. And you repented and trusted Jesus and said yes. And the great story that is the story of God at that moment intersected with your story and his story became your story. We have to tell people, we have to share Christ, we have to fish because it's a great story. And we know that if people's lives intersect with the story of God, it will be beautiful in them. We have to feel the beauty of that, the hope of that, the wonder of that. And know that, man, I talk to somebody, I don't know what to say. But there are crazy times when the voice of Jesus chooses to use the words of people who don't really know what to say. And out of awkward and uncomfortable words that come out of your mouth, what the person hears in their ears is the voice of Jesus calling them. That's why don't get all freaked out like, I don't know what to say. Because it's not your words that will save them. But the call to trust in Jesus is to follow and fish, and we fish because there's a great story. Not only is there a great story, but it's a story with a great message. And the message is a story that we call the gospel, the story that God saves people through the work of Jesus who came for us. And the reason we need to share that is not a message people are going to come up with on their own. It's not an intuitive message. In other words, 80% of people believe in God, but this is whatever religious background, whatever religious heritage, wherever they come, this is their basic framework. If they're Muslim, if they're from a Christian group that doesn't really teach the gospel and look to Jesus for your salvation, if they're just kind of pseudo-religious with their own belief in God, if they're a deist, it doesn't matter. This is what every person out there believes. They believe that there is a God. If they're theists, the 80%, they believe there is a God, that God is a good God, and that God, the good God surrounds himself with good people. That there is a God, he is a good God, and that good God surrounds himself with good people, and somehow good people connect to the good God, so I'm going to try to be a good person. That's what they will come up with. If they're just trying to figure stuff out on their own, if they're left and nobody tells them about Jesus, I don't care where you go in the world, there's a religious system, and that religious system says there is a God, he's a good God, he surrounds himself with good people connect to the good God, so here's the way to be a good person. And I'm telling you, Christianity, our message is not a religious message. Our message runs counter every other framework. You can research any religion out there that you want. And if you would like to have a conversation with me afterwards, I will take almost every religion out there. I can tell you how they go from good God, surrounds himself with good people, I got to be the good person. The gospel is that there's no such thing as a good person other than Jesus. We have to be rescued. And it's not an intuitive message. It's not a message I can come up with on my own. It's a message that has to be shared. Somebody has to tell you, yes, you got the good God right. The problem is that there's no good people. And that's why the story of Jesus is so important. Because if you aren't rescued from yourself, if you don't look to Jesus as your hope, there's no way. Trust in Jesus, not in you. And so what happens is every religion in the world says, there is a God, trust in me to get to him. Christianity says, there is a God. If I trust in me, I have no hope. Trust in Jesus. And people won't come up with that on their own. It's why we got to declare. A guy named St. Francis of Assisi, I can't even say that. That sounds wrong. Assisi, that sounds better. Long, long time ago was attributed with these words. Share the gospel, and when necessary, use words. That's one of those coffee mug things. And I want to tell you, the story of the Bible is about people who shared the gospel with their lives and with their words. And if we've embraced, I'm going to share the gospel just by living out among them, good. But eventually, they will just think you're one of the good people who's trying to connect with them and teach them how to be good. If that's all we do is we're good people who serve, who pick up trash, but there's never a point where we say, listen, trust Jesus. Everybody will look at us and go, there's a whole bunch of good people. They must be good with a good God. It's not until we say, listen, no, we're not good people. We were saved by somebody giving us something we didn't deserve. And so a great God with a great story, to a great message, to reach a great need. And the great need is that people's greatest need is to be reconciled, reconnected with their God. And the way that happens is through Jesus. And we need to be people, a church, a community of faith, demonstration. Yes, let's keep doing it. We got a bunch of stuff coming up where we're going to live out the faith just like we did yesterday. But we also want to challenge us to be a people who, through proclamation, through what we say, we begin to fish. We take up a line, we begin to fish. We begin to share with people about who Jesus is, why he matters in our life. And our goal, this is kind of the why, okay? I hope I've laid the groundwork. This is why we need to be doing it. The next 3 weeks is all about tackling the tackle box. What are some tools, some things that I can do to help me figure out how to do this, to have conversations, to build relationships, to do the things I need to do with the people around me? I was 13 years old, going to Maplewood Baptist Church that had a big old giant gymnasium, all kinds of friends, hung out in the gym. And something really cool, my first part of my youth years happened is that through the ministry out of this gym that my dad was really involved with, some other people, all of a sudden there were tons of kids there. Some of them were church kids who grew up in church, but there were also a ton of kids that just started coming from the high schools and area around there, just hanging out, middle schools and high schools. And every Friday night, the gym was open. We would roller skate, play basketball, play football in the gym. It was just a great time. And as I was hanging out, I got to develop a relationship with these two guys. Their names were Chuck and Rob. Chuck and Rob, we liked each other. We hung out. We did a lot of stuff together. The middle school years, one of those, they were friends that just connected. Seemed like we always had crushes on the same girls at the same time. We all liked baseball. We all liked basketball. It was just kind of one of those deals. But they were not people. They were not kids who had grown up in church. And so I began to feel this call that I'm supposed to talk to them about this. Freaked me out. I was 13. I didn't know what I was doing. Freaked me out. I did not know what to say. I did not know how to approach him, but I knew I was supposed to. I just felt this call to do it. And so on a Sunday night, we had Sunday morning church and Sunday night church. And so on Sunday night after church, we were supposed to do this big youth event. It was actually going to be at somebody's house, and we may have been going to get pizza. I have no idea what we were supposed to do. But I do remember this, that I felt like I was supposed to say something to him that night. So I just kind of grabbed him, and I started doing a whole bunch of middle school, 13-year-old, trying to explain the gospel to him, and I didn't make sense at all. I guarantee you what came out of my mouth sounded to most people like it was in Chinese because I didn't know what to say. I was struggling with it. But amazingly, they're like, we're kind of interested. And I did know this. If I grabbed my dad, he would know what to say. So I talked to him a little bit, and they were like, I'm interested. We grabbed dad. My dad started talking to him. We actually went back to my parents' house. My mom and dad sat in the room with me, Chuck, and Rob. And my dad began to take the little bit I had said to him that just perked their interest and began to explain that Jesus came and lived his life for me in my place. He died and he rose again three days later. And because of that, if you place your faith and trust in him, God will rescue you. And that night in my parents' living room, Chuck and Rob got down on their knees and they prayed and said, Jesus, come my life, save me. Now, I didn't save him. My words didn't make it, but I do know this, that God had called me to do something and it lit a fire. And being with somebody when they give their life to Jesus is amazing. And to be part of a story like Mike's for his friend is something that is eternal. But we got to get the line in the water. And we want to make this and like break it down and make it really practical for you this morning. We want to go from, I ought to be sharing with somebody. We want to start encouraging you to have somebody specific that you are praying for. And so this morning, we're going to do something that's a little bit different. And if you're a guest and you're like, I'm not doing that, that's okay. If you feel awkward, we're not pushing you towards doing that. But what we want to do is we want to do something that takes it from a general idea and brings it for the rest of this month to a specific. And so we got some people who are going to help us out with this. We actually have a card, and I forgot to grab one. I already took mine and threw it in here, and I meant to bring one up here and show it to you, but you'll see it. So if our folks who are doing this can start handing these out. It's a card that has four postcards, okay? And on the postcard, there are, on the card, a fish on each little postcard with lines, okay? What we would like you to do is to start thinking specifically about somebody. Actually, three somebodies. And during this series, our challenge to you is to think of these three people as somebody who might end up with a great fish story. People that you know that are in your network of relationships. They might be family members in that, might be friends, they might be coworkers. People that either aren't connected to Jesus, they don't know the true God, or the people that you're not sure. Okay? And what we'd like you to do is on each card, we want you to write the name of the same three friends. So you'll actually write the same three names four times. Okay? So everybody get a card. You're going to need a pen. Grab a pen. Tell you what, Sam, grab it. Yeah, John, help him out. Did somebody hand out pens while somebody else hands out the cards? There you go. Awesome, Stephen. There you can help too. We promise we're not posting these on Facebook, Twitter. There will not be a banner out here with all your names. Three of the four are specifically going to be for you. So let me explain what we want you to do with them, okay? Here in just a minute, we're going to do communion. I'll talk to you about that in a minute. We want you to write the same three names on all four cards, okay? People that you would like to pray for during this series, that your prayer will be, God, my prayer is that you would help me to some way reach out to them. But more than that, God, my prayer is that you would really save them, that you would change their life, that you would help them see the beauty of Jesus, okay? Same three names on all four cards. With three of the cards, what we would like you to do is just take it home and put it in places where you will see it. Use it as a bookmark in a book you're reading. Put it on your mirror, like stick it down at the bottom of your mirror so that when you're brushing your hair and brushing your teeth in the morning, you will see that and be reminded. Put it as something that just sits in your purse, ladies or guys, just something that kind of sits in a place in your car where you can see it. But choose three places where you will come across it often. And our encouragement for you is that every time you see the card, you just stop and pray for your three friends or the three people in the name. Just stop and pray. That's all we're asking you to do with this. That you stop and say, God, I ask you to do a work in this person's life, in this person's life, in this person's life. Each week, we're going to have some practical application, and our encouragement is to pick at least one of those friends and try doing what we're going to tell you to do, okay? But we're not going to have you come up here. I mean, it's not like you're going to get an email in the middle of the week and say, okay, did you do it? Or, you know, I mean, this is all between you and God and all that, but it's just something to get you thinking specifically about people. And then the fourth card, so you do that with three, any place you want to, reminder to pray. The fourth card, we got a fishing basket up here, okay? And I've already got mine in there. I'm not going to tell you who they are, but I got three names, actually four names. One's a couple, so I kind of cheated a little bit, but that's okay, all right? Four names of people that I am literally, I feel like I want to see Christ do a work in their life, that I want to be praying for them. I've put mine in this basket. We're going to do communion here in just a minute, and as we do communion, we're going to ask you to come up and do the same thing. Fold it in half. Nobody will do anything with these. They are going to stay in the basket. I promise you, you can be safe. This is not something where we're going to be pulling them out one a week and go, hey, who wrote these names, okay? They will stay in this basket. But each week during the service, we're going to come out and we're going to pray as a church over these people. It'll be something we do all 4 weeks of the series. We're going to do it this morning right after communion. John's going to come out. We're going to literally pray over the names of the people that are in this basket, asking God to use us to make a difference in their life. Okay, so write down the names of these friends. And when you come forward and participate in communion, just drop it in the basket. Okay? And the reason that we can do this morning is because a carpenter became a fisherman. A carpenter from Nazareth gave his life for us. And we have met God and know Jesus because of that. And if you're here this morning and you have a relationship with Jesus, we do communion as a way to remember the price that was paid. And Mike's fish story and the other ones we're here, what they're ultimately telling you is that there is a God who saved me. Jesus brought me salvation. And so as you come and do communion this morning, participate in the cup that represents the blood that was broken and shed for you, the body and the bread that was broken for you, celebrating that. As you come do that this morning, we're going to encourage you to just drop the one card in the basket, participate in communion. If you have an offering, the offering basket is here. If you're a guest, do not give an offering. The service is our gift to you. But just come by and pick these up drop those in and then celebrate communion. Give your offering if you have one. And just start thinking about these friends even as we're doing communion this morning. Then after that, after we sing a song for communion, John's going to come out and he's going to pray over these names just to help us start thinking about this, okay? So hopefully everybody's got a card, everybody's got a pen. I'm going to pray as I'm praying if you need to finish that card up. And then you come celebrate communion, celebrating the body and the blood of Jesus that was shed for us. Lord, we love you this morning. We praise you for your grace. We thank you for being a great God. And having a great message and saving us through that message. Lord, help us figure out what it looks like to be fishermen. Not just fishing for fish, but literally fishing for men. We love you, Jesus. Help us to follow you and to be this. In your name I pray. Amen.